everyone, welcome to The Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby. The Great American Bash is a podcast about the intersections of presidential politics and professional wrestling. Co-host and co-author Chris Kelly and I are experts in the field, considering that we're the authors of the book, The Donald, How Trump Turned Presidential Politics into Pro Wrestling. You could find that and pieces that we've written for places like The Washington Post and Slate, Vice, U.S. News and World Reports, and more at presidentwrestler.com. To listen to the newest episode of The Great American Bash, follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/GabPod, G-A-B-P-O-D. Originally released September 1st, 2017, here's episode 57 of The Great American Bash. Hey everyone, before we begin, I just want to let you know that we have an interview with author and real-life juggalo Nathan Rabin at the end of the show. Nathan and I were in Cleveland together at the same time, and you might have known that if you read his very interesting book, 7 Days in Ohio, Trump, The Gathering of the Juggalos, and the Summer Everything Went Insane. So that came out in September of 2016. It's becoming a little bit more interesting in the summer of 2017. His brand new book, Connie and Trump, a novella, is currently available. Both of those are available on NathanRabin.com. We'll get to that later. Just want to let you know there's that part of the show after Chris and I go over what happened in the week of presidential politics and professional wrestling. Without further ado, here's the show.
You smell what Barack has cooked.
I'm here to challenge you to a match.
When it comes to standing up for the American people, I am ready to rumble.
I think that we may need a wrestler in the White House.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby.
My name is Chris Kelly.
It is Thursday, August 31st.
It's day 223.
God,
of the Trump,
what a run.
Universal champion run.
End of August, it is. We are in Washington, D.C., and I have had 2 hours of sleep.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about 1:16 p.m., so we'll see what happens after we do this.
Yeah, we're recording this at the worst possible time because I just got back from the home of Pacific Championship Wrestling, and you're headed to
Prague in the Czech Republic. There's probably no wrestling there.
The closest is Rusev.
Yeah. Bulgaria. We're going to make a quick stop over in Bulgaria to go see the home of Rusev, who shows up in this show later on. Yeah, it was a weird week for you to be gone, but it was a good week for this because not much happened if you weren't in the Houston metropolitan area.
Just a lot of sadness.
Just a lot of sadness for everybody. That's obviously the biggest thing that happened this week is Hurricane Harvey. We're still in the midst of that, figuring out what's Houston's going to look like moving forward. That didn't stop the Universal Champion from seemingly bragging about the size of the storm. Did that come across on your trip?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it did.
It's a big storm. It's the biggest storm, and he seems like he can at least put that under his belt that he had the biggest storm. When he's in jail, well, we had the biggest hurricane. So
I think that's cute that you think he's going to go to jail.
No, maybe he's visiting.
Okay.
Yeah. Once they lock up.
The biggest jail.
The biggest jail. Once they lock up Hillary Clinton. Lock her up.
There you go.
You have to deliver on these promises.
Quick note about this. Being in Seattle and Portland the last week, yes, Harvey was all over the news. That's really all it was. Not a lot of talk about Trump and how Trump relates to that.
Yeah, he's managed to avoid a heck of a job brownie.
Yeah, it's interesting. Not necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, because usually it's like, oh, we want our leader to, you know, unite the country. Because Obama, after 9/11, he did a great job. That's why he got reelected, is because he stood on the ruins and said, we're not going to back down, and he, quote-unquote, united people.
Were you doing a bit? You said Obama.
Oh, I apologize. I was getting to Obama and Sandy in October of 2012. If he doesn't do that with Chris Christie, he probably wins, but he might not. I mean, these are things that you could really, you know, use to your advantage.
Yeah, not to be confused with Obama during Katrina, because he was not the president. Came some news to many people on Twitter. Trump had tweeted that he saw the damage firsthand. And the picture that they had to use on Trump's Instagram was him in a white hat and a windbreaker in a control center watching it on TV like he watches everything. And that was the closest they could find on state-run propaganda.
Specifically a 45 hat, which is available for sale because he's a wrestler.
You got to get good merch.
You have to wear your merch.
Yeah, you got to get good merch. So he's managed by not doing his job as president, he hasn't been talked about. He's just been able to kind of take credit for having the biggest storm. No, seriously. And not insert him in it, himself in it. That, and it was good cover for something he did last Friday when he pardoned Sheriff Joe.
Which was related. He seemed to have timed this to the storm.
Well, he did say that he was disappointed with the rating.
Of what?
Of talking about Sheriff Joe, because everyone was talking about this storm.
Yes, I got that part. But he said the word ratings.
Yeah.
There aren't Nielsen ratings per story.
So Donald Trump doesn't know that? That's as best I can gather. Yeah, and so Trump kind of avoiding any of the pitfalls that happened with George W. Bush when he didn't care about black people, I'm quoting Kanye West here. But that's not going to stop congressional Republicans from stepping in this at this moment, as the headline is basically that they're going to take $1 billion from FEMA and use it to build the wall, not break the walls down. They're going to build the wall.
Even so, we're playing that clip right now.
We are going to build a great border wall, you know, to stop illegal immigration. Yeah.
One. Break the wall. Break down the walls.
He's using the hurricane moment to stay on message, which is the one promise left of MAGA is build the goddamn wall.
So I want to make it clear that if it sounds like I'm laughing, I am not laughing at what Houston is going through. I respect Booker T. I respect every Texas wrestler. I respect Steve Austin. I know he's not from Houston, but you know. Yeah. I am laughing at the absurdity of building a wall in Mexico right now for obvious reasons.
Yeah, it's a pretty absurd times.
Cool.
And that's just $1 billion for the wall. That's not even the biggest bill that's coming up. You sent me an article today about Jared Kushner, the administration's Triple H, and the fact that the big building he bought at 666 Fifth Avenue, because we live in a hilarious satire of real times, when he bought the building in 2006 during the housing boom and then like the real estate boom, it cost $1.8 billion. What do you think he put down on that?
Just zero.
It wasn't a zero money down, unfortunately. It was a cool $50 million, which is about like 2%. He hasn't paid a cent of the half the mortgage that he still owes on that building, which will be due in February 2019, which is leading some to believe this is why the Kushners have gotten so active in trying to look for money around the world, in China and say Russia, because he's made a huge tiny mistake and he owes $1.8 billion on this building that is not worth that.
So I sent you this article this morning. I was like, hey, this is like when Vince acquired all the territories and was
it's all cash flow,
lending money against each other, doesn't really have the money. If anybody actually checks the books, like, why would they ever do this? And then it's like, no, I'm an idiot. That's everything his father-in-law has ever done.
Yeah, it was when Trump used junk bonds and just acquire properties and not have a cent for it, and then eventually leave someone else holding the bag.
Fun thought experiment. Is Donald Trump famous without going bankrupt yet maintaining his status in the early 90s?
Like if he just stayed rich?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, because he only has to do the Apprentice because he had no money.
Mm-hmm. If he's not doing Pizza Hut commercials, he's not doing McDonald's commercials, he's not doing Home Alone 2 cameos. Yeah. Actually, no, he might do Home Alone 2.
He might do that, because it's a pretty good movie.
He's not on the front page of the National Enquirer without the scandals.
Yeah, the divorces.
Exactly. No one really cares if, like, a poor guy gets divorced.
Yeah, no, that happens every day.
But a real rich guy that is perceived rich that scams the banks and...
It definitely led. So this is, maybe this is Kushner's moment now. Kushner's not, talk about people who are going to jail, if anyone is going to jail. No, I don't think it's going to be Donnie. I think it's going to be a fall guy.
Idiot. It's not going to be the Donald.
Yeah, no, you have the guy in the stable who eats the pen. You have like the Jim Neidhart of the Heart Foundation eats the pen. It's going to be somebody else. It's not Brett.
I still think it's not going to be Triple H.
No, it's going to be X-Pac.
Who's the X-Pac of the administration?
Yeah, we're going to find out.
It was going to be Gorka for the longest time.
Gorka? Just because he's a Nazi?
Yeah.
No, he's gone.
But he's already gone.
He's gone. Bannon? He's gone too. Yeah, we'll see.
This Wolfpack is not very strong.
No, this is not too sweet at all. But Donald Trump, even as Harvey has moved on, tropical depression hitting the rest of the South now, as Houston's figuring out what's next, like we said, Trump is back to work. He did a speech just before he recorded about his tax policy. Early yesterday, the rumor was that the theme was going to be unrigging the economy, because the economy is fucking fake. And he, you know, we're gonna get ourselves worked into our shoot economy. So we'll see. I think he just wants to cut. I'm guessing top marginal tax rates, cut them a lot, and then see what happens. I'm just guessing. I didn't listen to the speech.
Man, money's an illusion. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Where's the money, baby? So this working into a shoot, that was probably the biggest wrestling story this week while you were gone. But thankfully, you got to watch it because of YouTube and the 3-minute Raws that I put up on Facebook. Every
As of 5 a.m. this morning, it was the 38th ranked video on YouTube. I tried to watch the Hulu edition. It would not stream well. So, airport viewing of YouTube clips of wrestling gets you weird looks.
There you go. Saying. Yeah.
At the home of WCW, too. I was in the Atlanta airport.
It hasn't been that long. Yeah. So, Roman Reigns and John Cena will be facing off at their next pay-per-view, No Mercy, for reasons. So they had a contract signing, which is usually good for some physicality, some fake physicality. But this one was John Cena giving a promo cutting class to the star pupil of Roman Reigns, who failed. He failed the class.
So I'm going to play a bunch of this throughout this segment, but I want to start with the most important line of it, which is Roman Reigns not knowing the words that are coming out of his mouth.
But what are you really going to do, John? What are you going to do, huh? You're going to jump off that bus with that big-ass shuffle. That big shovel. That's what you're going to do, and you're going to bury as much young talent as you can.
First thing we're cutting a promo is use the words that were either in the script or that make sense in a normal sentence that you would say in real life. You don't shuffle someone. Unless you're shuffling off this mortal coil. You shovel, perhaps, is what he was looking for there.
You bury the talent with a shovel.
Yes.
This is like an ACT quiz.
Yeah. So,
what is the tool we use to bury the talent?
Triple H and John Cena. So the whole idea of this promo on like the 10,000 foot view is like, this is them shooting on each other. They're saying how they really feel about each other. Which we know is not how this works. It hasn't worked like that in a very long time, but the WWE has consistently used this work shoot thing where it gives the illusion that this is the real backstage stuff, that how they feel.
You mentioned this a few episodes ago, but this happens as well during matches. One way they do that is with the arms making an X.
Mm-hmm.
Brock Lesnar recently did that. You said, I've never seen that before.
Did Brock do the X?
Brock did the X while lying down on the stretcher.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly, he's going to come back, but right. He's giving the official, I'm actually hurt, legit, please help me,
yes,
sign with his arms.
Yes.
Isn't that the physical version of this?
Yeah, this is okay. Like, so it's trying to show that this part's actually real when, like everything else, it is actually fake.
Okay.
So this was well-scripted. The rumors that Cena helped write the whole thing and try to get, they still think that they can make Roman look sympathetic in this and be an underdog when he's just getting schooled by John Cena, who is out there. I mean, the part of it that's just like, it's fun and it was a fun promo, but it does nothing to do their goal, because now if Roman wins, the next night Cena just comes out and gives his like either a soldier or a hip hopper speech, and he just says, this man is the real deal, and lifts his hand like The Rock did a few years ago.
Sure.
Or if Cena wins, Roman actually is buried, which would be great, but it's not going to happen. It's crazy that, like Cena said, he's been there 5 years. He still can't cut a promo. Not a lot of guys can go toe-to-toe with Cena on the mic.
Let's rank them now. Number one, The Miz.
Yes.
Number two,
Kevin Owens.
Number three, AJ Styles, but only because AJ Styles doesn't know he's being an idiot sometimes.
Yeah.
That's it. That is a current active wrestler.
Sure. I think Ambrose could. He didn't have much of a feud with him.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's a pretty limited list.
Yeah. That's just how good John Cena is. This is not a Hulk Hogan, Mae Young situation where it's just legend talent that doesn't want to give up a paycheck.
Right.
It's a guy that seemingly wants everyone to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my issue with the entire thing. I loved it.
Yeah.
Clearly, I'm going to love this. I do like Roman Reigns. I clearly like John Cena. The problem with doing this right now is they're cutting all these kind of important PSAs for like Harvey relief.
Right.
It's really weird.
The cognitive dissonance when they cut from this. It's yeah. like, you're a fake ass bitch, John Cena, but you should please give to the Red Cross. Like, yeah,
it's weird. It's also like, who's the bad guy? Because one guy is a caring father, and the other guy makes the most make-a-wishes. I yeah. like both men.
Yeah, and this whole the cognitive dissonance of it, but also the fact that they still are putting Roman out there and seemingly want him to fail, because there was no way, even if this went as planned and Cena hadn't like gone, all right, come on, if he hadn't like coached him along and made fun of him and schooled him the whole time, I don't know if this would have gotten over what they wanted. And then they're in a tag team match together and the club loses for some reason. So it was a wacky episode of Raw. It finished well if you watched
so
the end.
So I actually saw
Raw.
The ending of Raw live. Mm-hmm. For some reason, the bar I was in Seattle had the East Coast feed,
yeah,
which was wonderful. And my wife did not care.
Yeah, that's not breaking news here on the show. But the main event of the evening was a rematch between Alexa Bliss and the new women's champion again, Sasha Banks, who has, as of Monday, 0-4, has never successfully defended the belt one time, and they've hotshotted the belt back and forth. Or the title, I should say, not a belt. And Alexa Bliss won, and her friend Nia Jax came out to cheer her, and then she slammed her.
I loved it.
Yeah, it was great, because setting up the next feud. Nia's great. I'm excited for them, and that it was a turn you could see a mile away, but they did it right, and they ended the show strong. Kind of ridiculous they keep shooting these belts back and titles back and forth. They're doing It's a New Day as well over on SmackDown, because they want to be able to say that they're the most decorated tag team of all time. So sure. If they can win it, that's the thing with Flair. To be a 16-time champ, you had to lose it 15 times. So, yeah. Like, it's not as impressive. It sounds, they think it sounds impressive. I say the belt and title thing only because on SmackDown, in the Fashion Files, which is no longer Fashion Peaks, unfortunately, they made that joke. Do you know what that's about?
It's Vince.
Vince does not let them call championship belts that go around your waist. You cannot say belt. If you're going, like, Braun Strowman got in trouble when he cut a promo a few months ago. So he's like, I'm coming for that belt, Roman, or whatever he said. And
hear me out, devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Braun is so big, it might be the only belt available.
Yeah.
A legit belt.
Can I please have that in a 52 men's
meet? Exactly.
Yeah. But he makes them call them titles. Because a belt sounds like a sport, not entertain. I don't know, man. Vince is a weird guy.
So you're saying 7-year-old billionaires or potential billionaires or possibly billionaires are weird?
Yeah, who knew? Who knew well, he's not really a billionaire, but we're living with some version of that every day. So Raw ended really well with a women's angle. As we talk about quite often here, it's a pretty good time for women's wrestling. Not just in the WWE, but it happens to be right now in the WWE. They're doing the Mae Young Classic. They taped it in July. They put the first four episodes up on Monday. They'll put another four on the next Monday. And then sometime in September, they're doing the live finale in Vegas. I would recommend watching some of this.
I will
on the
be
network.
Watching all of this. Yeah. Clearly, if Ronda comes in, this is where she will come in.
She's already appeared. She's her friend, one of the four horsewomen of MMA. Shayna Baszler is a wrestler. She's a good heel. They're doing a really good job building faces and heels. They have a good mix of some indie people that fans would like to see, that smarky fans would like to see. They have some. They're clearly doing their, like, we're international, so we're going to get a Chinese woman who's literally never wrestled a match before. And they have people that looks like, you know, that they want to sign. So it's definitely, it might not be as much talent as came in with the cruiserweights and the 205 Live, but even if a couple more of these women come in who have already been signed, it's going to be great.
What I want to mention is Mae Young is a horrible person.
Yes.
Chris and I recapped and reviewed, whatever, every WrestleMania.
Yes.
Every week in a row from 1 to 32. And we noticed that Mae Young was at all of them, or most of them. And then we did some...
It's not Mae Young.
I'm thinking of who?
Fabulous Moolah.
Fabulous Moolah.
Mae Young was maybe her enforcer and potentially her lover. So she's not totally innocent in the crimes of Fabulous
Moolah. The reason why I'm bringing up Mae Young and it's the Mae Young tournament is because within 50 years, there's going to be like the Donald Trump Business School at the level right now of like the Harvard Business School.
Yeah.
Because perception is greater than reality. It doesn't actually matter if you're a horrible person. Just make sure your name is in the lights.
7 days in Ohio is all about the RNC and the insane clown posse. And you wrote this in July of 2016, and it was released in September of 2016. In September of 2017, Insane Clown Posse and the Juggalos will be coming to the mall in Washington, D.C., steps from the White House, which is occupied by Donald Trump. 14 months ago. Did you think this was a possibility?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I think one of the final parts of my book is me kind of contemplating the March on Washington, which, again, one of the weird things about this, you know, see how kind of the world is different outside of Juggalo world and inside of Juggalo world, is that they announced this a long fucking time ago. Like, this is old, old, old news to me. And I kind of, for a while there, I kind of wondered if it might not actually happen. I mean, I just attended the Gathering of the Juggalos, Insane Clown Posse's yearly festival of arts and culture, and it was in Oklahoma City. And you would imagine if you're trying to get your fan base to do something like, you know, purchase transportation to go to D.C. and then participate in a political protest, a rally, probably for the first time in your life, you kind of need to sell them on that idea. And they're Juggalos, so you kind of need to sell them very, very, very hard. You kind of need to use the, you know, sort of Gathering infomercial approach to it. And I was fascinated because they didn't sell it at all. Like, nobody spoke about it. It was mentioned briefly in the yearly seminar, which is where they announced it last year. So I kind of thought, like, this might not happen, or if it does happen, it might be just this incredible, incredible anticlimax. And then, about 2 weeks ago, something happened that changed everything. And again, this is fascinating to me from, like, a wrestling perspective, because, you know, they kind of went from being these heels. They went from being, you know, the walking punchlines, the dudes who everybody made fun of, who everybody looked down on, to being kind of these weirdly, possibly heroic figures, because people want them to, you know, start shit with the alt-right. And there's this alt-right rally now. Before, you had an element of novelty because you had Insane Clown Posse and Juggalos, who people like to laugh at, who people like to gawk at, who people find morbidly fascinating, doing something unexpected, you know, doing something political. But now you have the element of conflict added to that, and people are really, really excited. And I have no idea how it's going to go, and I'm a little bit worried that it will be a total shit show.
When you say shit show, what exactly do you mean? Because in addition to going to the Gathering for 7 out of the last 8 years, you did attend the RNC, and you have attended events that could be described as shit shows that usually don't result in violence or death. What do you? So when you say shit show for September 16th, what do you mean?
That is a very good question. And I think kind of best case scenario by shit show, I mean very poorly organized. They're kind of thrown together, you know, kind of ambling and shambling and not really knowing what to do with yourself. Again, I think that's kind of a best case scenario for the shit show. The worst case scenario is violence, is conflict. And again, it's this weird, I mean, I remember when I was at the Republican National Convention having this weird moment of intense contradiction, where I was in the middle of a protest. I think I was protesting police brutality. Appropriately enough. And part of me was like, it would be very exciting if this kind of got out of control, if like something happened, if it stopped being so, you know, sort of safe and so, you know, kind of above board. Like there was this weird impulse of me, like I kind of want shit to go down. And then I'm like, no, you don't fucking want shit to go down. Like you are a responsible human being. You're a dad. And again, this is like how fucking middle class and banal I am. When I think of this shit, I'm like, I wear glasses. I would be very pissed off if my glasses got shattered during some sort of melee. And again, that's my like weird fucked up bourgeois middle class conception of, you know, being Haskell Wexler and medium cool. You know, that I don't want people to get hurt. I don't want anybody to die. I don't want there to be violence. I also want to hold on to my glasses.
I think that's
so reasonable. Alt-right, please have respect for my glasses.
So when you attend the gathering, I know for a fact that in your book, you don't know me, but you hate me. You mentioned at one of the gatherings you were in full makeup.
Yeah, well, that was only for the final night.
I understand, but did you have glasses on over the makeup?
I did have glasses on over the makeup.
Okay, so was it difficult to see?
It was not difficult to see. The only thing about it is, and again, this is, I think, one of the reasons why people have such a negative impression of the gathering, is that it's a very visceral thing. So it's very, very hot. And I remember fairly explicitly just sweat dripping down my face and kind of like getting in my eye and like smudging my makeup a little bit. I remember, going back to the hotel that evening and being very, very, very grateful and happy to wash off all of my makeup. That was a very strange experience. And I will not be in makeup at the march. But part of me kind of hopes that, A, that there's a huge turnout of Juggalos. And then secondly, they hit the Smithsonian, they hit the National Art Museum in full makeup. Because it's not enough to, agitate for your rights. You kind of need to change hearts and minds about what Juggalos are. I'd like to think, that this will be this, wonderful, transcendent, show of solidarity and of the ICP and Juggalos evolving, into something even more profound and even more special. But again, I just don't know. It's, I would say it's going to be like wrestling. Except that, it's not, everything doesn't seem figured out in advance.
In 7 days in Ohio, you mentioned that you wore, or you bought 3 Juggalo Lives Matter t-shirts. And not necessarily ironic reasons, but interesting reasons. Do you see any chance of, say, Black Lives Matter or the general left movement embracing Juggalos in a way that prior to 2 weeks ago doesn't make any sense, but now it actually has a weird, beautiful potential alliances of the outsider?
Well, I think this is a really weird, interesting moment for me as somebody who, loves Insane Clown Posse, who identifies as a Juggalo, but who also is very political, who is very progressive, who writes and thinks a lot about politics, particularly presidential politics. And what's frustrating to me is that Insane Clown Posse they're kind of doubling down on this idea that this is an apolitical political rally. The official line of Insane Clown Posse is, "We're too stupid to know anything about politics. We only care about this one issue. Everything else is just kind of bullshit." Wasn't it true with Shaggy Tito? And they're like, "Well, what about the alt-right? What about Donald Trump?" They're like, "I don't fucking care about that shit." And it's this frustrating thing, and it also opens you to allegations of hypocrisy, because they're, saying, if it doesn't involve the FBI classification, we don't give a fuck, and we don't know, and we don't care. But at the same time, they're kind of frustrated that other artists aren't coming to their aid, other artists aren't supporting them. I mean, they're going to have this big concert, big quotation marks, after the rally, and it's kind of heartbreaking, because it's, the core of ICP. Two Live Crew is going to be there, which should be kind of fun. I saw them at Canadian Juggalo Day. And they're saying, we're frustrated because like these artists aren't embracing our cause because they don't think it directly relates to them. Yet at the same time, they're saying we don't care about the other causes because they don't relate to us. And I would love for Insane Clown Posse to embrace the concept of intersectionalism. I think that's a very weird, kind of like faux intellectual progressive kind of thing to thrust upon them. I think this idea of them as being woke, as being, these kind of like Bernie Sanders in clown makeup, it's an attractive idea. It's an unlikely idea, but again, I don't think it necessarily correlates to what's actually going on with them. I think they're, a pair of high school dropouts with a struggling business to look after and a very complicated, set of variables. Like, I want them to say, "Fuck Donald Trump, fuck the alt-right, Black Lives Matter, trans rights matter." But, that's probably not going to fucking happen.
Does it matter if they do? Isn't simply the act of performing in makeup for 20-plus years and creating a cottage industry that supports small businesses in Michigan and throughout the United States inherently saying, "Fuck you" to certain systems already? Just by doing the thing, you are surpassing the thing. For example, Michael Jordan understood that both Republicans and Democrats buy shoes. It doesn't necessarily matter what he says. What matters are his actions that transcend messages. In theory and in reality, doesn't ICP's family transcend all of those other labels?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, and again, I've kind of rewritten about this. Like, if you look at Insane Clown Posse's music, if you listen to their ideology, like what they've said, like, it's very anti-racist, it's very anti-redneck, it's very anti-rich people. It's very much about, you know, glorifying what's poor, you know, what's cheap, what, you know, people without resources can have. I mean, that's what Faygo's all about. You know, people laugh at it and they think it's silly and theatrical and ridiculous, and it is. But, you know, they do it because that's the soda of poor people, and they're representing poor people, you know, and the ostracized and the outcasts. And again, I just kind of wish that they could see their struggle connecting with other struggles and to understand that, you know, this doesn't exist in a vacuum. You know, this does not stand alone. We're all dealing with this shit, and we're dealing with shit because of Donald Trump.
That's where you and I differ. I'm in the book, and we're differing about this. I don't think we're differing about Donald Trump.
Right.
I think that you think, and a lot of people think, that he is the problem. And I completely understand why you think that.
Right.
Maybe it's because you have and had more faith in the American public than I. And I think that's maybe where it stems from. Where if you look at ICP, for 20 plus years they've been doing this, and every once in a while they're given this giant platform, like in 1999 when they worked with the WWE and they were given a giant platform and their stuff was sold at Hot Topic. That seemed absurd at the time, and then it flows and it goes in and out, and then all of a sudden they're the victim and all of a sudden they're the hero. And I feel like that's the exact same thing with Trump. It ebbs and it flows, and at the end of the day, Trump is just a figurehead for certain people, for some people that represents hope, and for others that represents hate. The difference between the Juggalos and ICP versus Trump is Trump, at the end of the day, stands for Trump, and that's his prerogative, more power to him. Where ICP does not stand for ICP, they stand for family and unity, and that's all of Juggalos. It seems like it's a very different thing. So if you look at the actual base of support and the reasoning behind it, it's a lot stronger than anything Donald Trump or any politician, save for maybe Barack Obama, because his was based on hope. Hope is not that much different of an idea than family. And I know this is a rambling statement that's leading to your question, but hear me out. Do you think, completely serious here, Violent J has potential to run in Michigan for any office?
I would say no.
Okay, why is that?
Because, again, I think they're setting boundaries, you know, and one of those boundaries is that they'll only get involved in politics to the extent of protesting the FBI's designation of them as gay. It seems like they've had a real window to say, again, like the things that people like us want them to say, to make things explicit, you know, because again, like I get asked all the time, like, you know, aren't Juggalos Trump supporters? You know, they're uneducated, they're poor, I bet they're racist, like they fit into that whole thing. And, you know, again, I kind of understand where that's coming from. But again, I mean, you have things like, one of the complexities of this is that Insane Clown Posse, a lot of their roster has left the label. And they have beef with Insane Clown Posse. I mean, I watched a video yesterday, and it was, you know, a member of Twisted, who were Insane Clown Posse's, you know, biggest protégés, have a family that's almost as big as Insane Clown Posse. And Twisted was basically saying, like, you can go to the march, or you cannot go to the march, but if you go to the march, what you're doing is supporting a band's publicity stunt. And, you know, for you know, a group that has so much cachet with Juggalos and who Juggalos find so, you know, worthwhile and important, for him to say something like that, I think is really kind of devastating and kind of speaks to a certain level of cynicism that, you know, again, I don't know if it's unearned. You know, I think I kind of have my own rosy, romanticized, idealized conception of Insane Clown Posse. And, you know, it doesn't always correlate to what the duo actually is and what their actual ideology and what they're capable of doing, what they want to do, what kind of the scope of their ambitions are.
You're on the front page for the Juggalo March website. Are you affiliated with the march at all, or do they just ask you for a quote?
They asked me to write a piece for it, like a little editorial for it, and I did it. They offered me a small amount of money, and I said, I'm doing it for the love, my man. And I will say that it's a small enough amount of money that, like, yeah, I could feel okay about turning it down. So again, it's this weird thing where I'm covering it for High Times, you know, and I kind of have my a certain level of skepticism, you know, at this point. But I'm also a juggler. I will also be marching, you know, also be, you know, kind of part of this group. So yeah, it will be a very interesting couple of days, I think. And I think it will kind of go a long way towards determining kind of how juggalos and the Cloud Posse are viewed in the future. I feel like this is a real turning point, you know, it's kind of a real crossroads. And it'll be interesting to see where it goes to from here.
How did you feel about the the Third Man Records collaboration from a few years back?
You know, it's funny. I actually have a framed autographed copy of that. And you don't know, maybe you don't like me and my 4-star Rolling Stone review. And I've never actually listened to the track, which is kind of weird. But this is interesting. For the 20th anniversary Great Malenko reissue, they had one new song, and it is a collaboration with Cheap Trick. And I'm somebody who loves Cheap Trick. I love NSYNC Clown Posse. There's really no reason that I haven't heard the song, except that, yeah, it's... to use a phrase that I used earlier, shit show. I'm guessing that that collaboration might be a bit of a shit show.
So I have the... Like most men of a certain age that do a certain job, I own that 7-inch, the ICP Third Man 7-inch. It's not that bad. And the first line, or the most memorable line that I don't think I'll ever forget, is Mozart was dope for the most part. And it's like, I sort of disagree with that. I don't want to get into the actual music of NSYNC Clown Posse.
Yeah.
I think, like most people that are...
It's dope for the most part.
See, now that's where I would disagree with you.
I would put it on a level with Mozart.
I absolutely adore the ethos and the ethics behind everything they do, but I just have something against the actual sounds that they create, and it's...
Yeah, I can see that.
And it transcends that, because it's not just like, oh, I don't like these notes played together. I don't like Trick spirituality.
Right. So you're saying, did you say Trick spirituality?
Yeah, I want Johnny Cash, I believe in God, here it is, it's on my sleeve, versus... On the last song, on the sixth concept record, it was about God. Like, I don't like that. Are you watching wrestling? Did you ever get into pro wrestling?
You know, the thing is, I watch wrestling when I'm at the Gathering of the Juggalos. And I've actually really gotten into wrestling there. You know, like, one of my only regrets from the past year, Gathering, was that I didn't get to see as much wrestling as I would have liked. I watched wrestling at the Canadian Juggalo weekend. That was kind of fascinating. And I feel like I will not only be watching, but I will be participating in the epic metaphorical wrestling match between NSYNC Clown Posse and the rest of the world.
Have you ever studied ICP's run in the WWF, now E, or any other promotion?
I have not. No, that's the thing, is like, they have, for a pair of high school dropouts whom nobody thought had any talent at all, they have an almost impossibly sprawling empire. You know, they have like an impossibly sprawling history. I would kind of love to watch. Is that stuff on like YouTube or?
Oh, yeah, all of it. Like, they were part of pay-per-views and stuff. Like, it's not like an underground thing. Like, they were with Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Undertaker in Madison Square Garden. Like, it's a big deal.
Yeah. That's crazy. Just like Donald Trump.
Exactly. Final question. When you're explaining this to people, when you're explaining ICP or the RNC to people, and you don't want them to laugh, but you want them to listen, do you have a go-to line or a go-to pitch? Like, hey, I'm a well-received author, or hey, I used to write for the AV Club, or hey, I've written 1,000 film reviews, or hey, I coined a phrase that you've used in casual conversation. How do you get over ICP or the RNC to the layman?
That is a good question. I think part of it is, you know, I kind of came to it as an outsider, you know, from like a sociological or journalistic perspective. So again, I think I'm kind of a juggalo whisperer. You know, so I kind of feel like part of my skill set is I kind of come from, you know, and then the other thing too is like I come from this very bifurcated background where on one hand, like, yeah, I worked for the AV Club for 18 years and I wrote for Pitchfork and I've written my seventh book now. But I also grew up super fucking poor. I also grew up in a group home. I never knew my mom, like my brother, my blood brother, you know, high school dropout, been in a lot of knife fights, been shot sometimes, hardcore juggalo. I'm kind of hoping that I can bring him to the march with me. So it is kind of interesting. And I feel like now in particular, part of my job is kind of explaining to people why this doesn't seem as crazy as it might seem from the outside and why it actually, you know, kind of speaks to their ideology, speaks to this world that they've created. I think also part of what I've done as a writer has been to articulate greatness and the value and the worth of things that are supposed to be terrible. So nothing is considered to be more terrible than Insane Clown Posse. And consequently, you know, that's been a huge, I guess, kind of passion of mine is to try and change the public perception of Insane Clown Posse. And yeah, I'm about to discover whether or not that's about to get a whole lot easier or a whole lot harder.